This is Jean McMillan interviewing Patricia Walsh at her home, 21 Chatfield Drive, on Tuesday, August 30th, 2011. What is your full name?
Mary Patricia Del Walsh.
Where were you born and your birthday, please?
Sharon Hospital, Sharon, Connecticut, October 8th. 1957.
What are your parents' names and their birthplaces?
My dad is John Gordon Dell. He was born just outside London, England, June 14th, 1921. And my mom is Myra Margaret McCarthy. She was born in New Brunswick, Canada, November 2nd, 1922.
Do you have siblings?
I do. I have six. My eldest brother, Scott, passed away 14 years ago. And I have five siblings that live here in the area.
Would you name them?
Richard, Catherine, Stephen, Maureen, and Sterling.
How did your parents come to this area?
My dad, after World War II, was stationed in Canada. And he met my mother in Toronto. They married in 1949. They came here to Sharon in 1954. My dad was employed by the Buckley family as a caretaker for the property in Sharon.
Could you give me a specific description of the Buckley property in Sharon?
It's on White Hollow Road. There was approximately 800 acres. The Buckley main house was two doors down from us, and there was two smaller homes on the property, and our family lived in one. My dad was employed a couple of places. He worked for George Kiefer in forestry. He worked at LPM, and in his off time, he was caretaker for the property. Maintaining the fields, and he also had a pheasant farm.
What was your education? Did you go to local schools?
I did. I went to Sharon Center School, as did all my siblings, and then to Housatonic.
I'm going to ask you some memories of various places here when you were growing up. What do you remember about the Grove?
The Grove. We were not Salisbury residents, because we were living in Sharon at the time, and but we had friends, great friends, who lived here, and we would go to the Grove with them. And as children, my biggest memory was Frank Markey, who was the manager of the Grove at the time. And as kids, we were I don't really want to say afraid of him, but we respected him. He was a big man, I remember that. And the Grove store was kind of a fun place to go. You'd go in and get a soda, and I think they were either 5 or 10 cents. And then there was a 2 cent deposit, and when you took the bottle back, you would get your 2 cents, and very often there was pretzels at the time were 2 cents, and we would just trade it for a pretzel. And so just a lot of really good memories, a lot of great old friends that always had there. It was a fun place to meet.
Where did you go to church?
We started going to St. Bernard's in Sharon. That's where I had my first communion and confirmation. And then, I'm not really sure why, but my mother started taking us to St. Mary's in Lakeville.
And you had a nice little story about head coverings.
Yes. In those days, Catholic women and girls were required to cover their heads. And at Easter, I remember we had like really nice little outfits and hats. But other times, we didn't have anything else. So my mother would bobby pin a napkin to the tops of our heads.
What can you tell me about Bill Barnett's Variety Store?
That was a favorite place to go. It was so exciting. Just to go to Barnett's with the creaky wood floors, and it was just filled with so many toys. and really neat stuff. And the second floor of that building, I remember there you see the staircase, and at the bottom of it was like a kind of like a velvet rope that would be hooked on, and it was Toyland upstairs, and it would just be open at Christmas. And I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 weeks, or maybe for a month at Christmas it would be open. And it was so exciting to go up there, because it would be like Christmas morning. You just didn't know what to expect when you got up there. And Santa would be up there, and you would see Santa and tell Santa what we wanted.
Did you sit on his lap?
Uh-huh.
And he was in appropriate
dress?
Yes.
Yep.
You had a lovely story about Halloween with Mrs. Belter.
Cora Belter, who lived on White Hollow Road, she lived about a mile, I guess, from us. And my mother, I just remember this one instant, my mother taking us for trick-or-treating, and we stopped at Cora Belter's, and she wasn't expecting us, and she had never had children come trick-or-treating at her house. And I don't really remember if she did give us anything. I think maybe she may have just given us apples or something. I don't really quite remember, but I remember that the years afterwards, she was prepared for us when we came.
Good. A good lesson learned. How did you get to work with the senior citizens in the area?
Something that just quickly came into my mind about Halloween. And it's not Salisbury Lake related, but I remember going to Sharon Center School after trick-or-treating in Sharon, and all the children would meet, and there was a big tub in the middle of the gymnasium, and it was filled with pennies and coins, and you would dump your UNICEF box. UNICEF boxes were for the children around the world to raise money for them, and we would not only get candy, but we would get coins in this little box. Mm-hmm. And then I remember that distinctly, going and then dumping the coins into that big tub.
What a wonderful idea.
Yeah.
It used to be, I don't know that it's still functioning or not, but I think it still is. I hope so.
And at Christmas, we would go there, and Santa would be on the stage, and the children would all line up, and you'd go individually, and I think it was the American Legion that used to give you a present, and an orange, and a candy cane.
Lovely.
Yeah, that was a really nice memory.
They are nice memories. They're wonderful to have.
Didn't need to get off track.
You're not off track. This is what we want. How did you get to work with the senior citizens?
Probably late 70s, early 80s, I worked in the so-called kitchen of the Grove. They were serving meals every day for lunch, and I would go for 2 or 3 hours. It was just a little part-time job, one of the many part-time jobs I had at the time. And then the manager of the Grove, of the senior lunch program, she left, and I applied for the position, and so I took over in the early 80s, I think probably 81 or 82, something like that. I did it for a couple of years, and then I left, and I'm trying to remember where I worked, but I think I was working for a graphic designer at the time. I was called by Bud Trotta. He called me and asked if I would consider coming back to run the program again, because he said whatever you were doing was working and it's not working anymore. So I felt very flattered, and so I said yes, of course. So they combined the two jobs of municipal agent. In the state of Connecticut, it's required that there be a municipal agent. It's somebody, it's like an advocate for the elderly, someone to do the paperwork, the Medicare forms and all that. So they combined the two jobs. So I was municipal agent and then director of the lunch program. And I did that for 12 years.
What were you doing with the lunch program that made it work? Do you know?
I'm not sure. I guess I tried a lot of different things. Some things worked, some things didn't. I started the exercise program. I started potluck suppers. I tried doing dances, things like that didn't work. I started art classes. Walking group, and then I also organized bus trips, which were very popular, and then as well as the parties, the holiday parties, and then I also brought in speakers. So it was a multifaceted position, and it was, and I loved it because it, I could be creative.
Yes, very creative.
And so I would come home and the wheels would spin. I'd say, well, let's see, what could I do something different and that would bring people in? And as I said, sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't.
When you started, about how many people did you have, and did the programs grow as you added more and more things?
Yes, when I went back, you know, the second time, there was probably maybe 10 or 12 people. I don't quite remember, but it had grown to about 30 to 40 a day for attending the lunch and then for programs and so forth.
That's
so
outstanding.
Yeah, and then for the bus trips, they were very, very popular, and I would always, very, very rarely would I have to cancel a trip because I didn't have enough people.
I think I remember those.
Yeah.
I think I remember those. And they were a great deal of fun.
They were. Sometimes they were just day trips, and very often they were multi-day trips. So we would go to Canada Pennsylvania. And, mm-hmm. Yeah, they were great trips.
How did you get started with P.D. Walsh's Country Store?
Well, after my husband passed away, Richard Walsh, who had the apothecary shop, he passed away in 2008, and we were living in North Carolina at the time. And I decided to move back up here to be near my family and his family, which are all in New England. And, I guess maybe in the winter of 2009, 2010, I thought, well, I've got to get on with my life. And I thought, what should I do? And I bought this house on Chatfield Drive, and I have a basement full of stuff because he and I were big collectors and tag sale auction people, and I didn't have anywhere to put this stuff, and I thought, well, maybe that's my calling. Maybe that's, I'll open up a little shop and someplace that I can lock the door when I feel like it. And I looked in spaces in Lakeville and Millerton, and nothing kind of jumped out at me. And then I heard that the Falls Village Inn had been sold, and that was in March of 2010. And I thought, well, maybe I'll look in Falls Village, thinking that Falls Village will have a resurgence. And I looked at a little space over there, and it was too small. And then I learned that the former town hall was for rent. And so I looked at it. I went in with the first select woman, Pat McCara, and I walked in and I said, wow, it's way too big, but I'll take it. Because I just fell in love with it instantly. It had so much charm. The wood creaky floors of it I remembered from Barnett's and that kind of thing. So I decided to create this sort of memory place that was all very important to me as a child.
And having been in your shop, it does create memories.
Yeah, and I wanted to do that for children. Mm-hmm. So I have penny candy, which is a penny. I'm losing money on it, but kids come in and love it. Uh-huh. And I have an old-fashioned cash register, and they've never seen that.
Yeah.
But older people come in and say, wow, I haven't seen one of these since I was a kid.
Yeah.
Or it, so that just means a great deal to me. And it doesn't really, you know, I'm not making any money at what I'm doing.
But you love it, and it's important for the community.
Yeah.
It's a way of forming memories, which is... Yeah, it's invaluable.
Yeah. And a lot of it has to do with Richard because he, you know, his, so many people had great memories of his apothecary shop and the soda fountain and that you could go in there and get a battery for your watch or you could get a greeting card. And so I'm sort of have a little bit of that of him there as well.
Did Dick buy the apothecary shop from the Gentiles?
Yes, in 1973.
Now, can you tell us a little bit more about the apothecary shop?
As I say...
Where was it in Lakeville?
It was right on Main Street, which is now the China Inn Chinese restaurant. And it's next to the post office. Dick bought it in 1973. He and his family were living in southern Connecticut, and he came up here and looked at it. I think Bam Whitbeck told him about it being for sale, because he and Bam knew each other from UConn, from pharmacy school. And so Dick came up and looked at it and decided to purchase it and brought all his family up here. And then I don't really have that many memories as a kid going in there.
No.
My memories were of after St. Mary's Church going to Salisbury Pharmacy, because we would go, my mother would give us a quarter each and we could buy whatever we wanted. And I remember my brother, older brother, always getting a frosted root beer in
okay.
Salisbury Pharmacy. And then I think we would also just get candy or something. But. And then, let's get back to the apothecary. I went to work for Dick in 1984, I think. Actually, that was probably when I worked for him in between the two times that I was running the Grove. That was one of the part-time jobs I had. And then, you know, great memories. Great, you know, he had that great soda fountain in there, and there was Mel Smith and Lucille LaRosky.
I was going to ask you about Lucille.
Sally Mott.
Yep.
And
her daughter.
Tina LaRosky. They were all, yep, they all, the whole family worked there. The generations worked there. Tina did the books. And then Sally's daughter,
Monica
worked in there. And a lot of the neighborhood kids worked there. Mm-hmm. Patty Williams, who is now the town clerk, she
yep.
worked in there. And she was telling me recently, she said, we used to love it whenever Dick would leave the store, because we'd change the station, because he always had it on NPR, and we'd turn it on to a rock station or something.
Yeah, yeah. But it was a wonderful place to pick up anything you needed.
Yeah.
I remember it when I came to town, and I came at the end of the Gentiles, because I only remember it as the apothecary shop. And it was just, you know, you needed a battery, or you needed, I could remember Sunday morning people coming in and getting their newspapers. And somebody would walk in the door, and he'd hand him a newspaper. He didn't have to ask.
Plus, he always put their name. He would
yep.
reserve them for people and put their names on.
Yep.
That was a huge thing on Sunday mornings doing the newspapers.
Oh, yes.
Because he used to have to hire a kid to come in and help. And I just remember in that back room, it would be stacked almost to the ceiling with Sunday Times.
Mm-hmm.
And he would write the names of all those people on those newspapers, holding them for them. And then very often, those people would not come up for the weekend. And then the papers would be there, and then he would give them to them when they come up the following weekend, if they wanted them and if they didn't. And, so it was a very one-on-one, hands-on kind of a place, which you don't see very much today. You know, and to have a personal pharmacist that, he would get calls at home of somebody whose prescription would run out, and he would go down and open up the store.
Well, Bam Whitbeck would do the same thing.
Bam would do the same, and pharmacists don't do that today. I don't know if they can't by law, or, and maybe even those guys weren't allowed to be doing it back in those days either, but they did it.
But they were neighbors and friends, and that's
exactly.
what you do.
Exactly.
Have we forgotten anything? What would you like to add?
I think so. Just another quick little thing about the apothecary. I remember the phone booth. Remember the phone booth in the... It was in the
yes.
corner.
Yes.
And you don't see that anymore. You certainly don't see phone booths anymore.
It's pretty hard to find a phone right now.
But I just wonder how he did it. You know, he was there 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
From 7 in the morning till 6 at night.
Mm-hmm.
Sunday 7 till 1. But he, just incredible. And sometimes I wake up in the morning and I say, geez, how did you do this?
Uh-huh.
Run a store, and it was a lot. Yeah. And his children all have great memories of the place. But I think that they, and we've spoken about this, that, you know, none of them went into retail because they saw what it was doing to him. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
How many children did he have?
His four.
And do they live in the area?
One is in Boston, one is in Marblehead, Mass., one is in Sharon, and one is in Providence. And I'm in touch with all of them. And,
and
nine grandkids. And,
Any great-grandchildren yet?
Not yet. Nope. Actually, the first grandchild just married in July.
Ah.
I just went to the wedding.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So, they're a great family.
So,
a lot of memories.
Getting from St. Mary's to Salisbury Pharmacy, did your mother drive?
She did.
And what kind of a car did you have?
We had it was probably a 58, I think it was a Chevy station wagon. I remember it was green.
Oh, okay. The green one.
But I just, you know, in those days, you didn't wear seat belts and, you know, and my sister was here last week and we were talking about Barnett's and she said, remember the time I got left there? My mother and I distinctly, I think there was probably five or six of us in the car. And we were just at the top of Wells Hill. We had been to Barnett's, and we were at Wells Hill heading back to White Hollow. And my mother suddenly said, where's Maureen? And we turned around and went back, and she was standing outside the store crying.
Oh, sure.
She was about six or seven, and she got left. But
but she got picked up.
Oh. But that was her memory of Barnett's.
Not the most cheerful. I want to thank you so much.
Oh, thank
for
you.
This.
It was a pleasure.
You are a wonderful raconteur, and I've enjoyed myself thoroughly.
Thank you very much.